Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the study of antiquity and the Middle Ages. As always, I am your host, Nick Barksdale, and today we are joined once again by a channel favorite, and that is none other than geneticist Razib Khan. Khan, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man.
Before we jump into this episode and what it's about, I want Mr. Khan to tell us a little bit about his current and upcoming projects that in many ways is going to play into what this episode is actually about. And so, Mr. Khan, tell us what you're currently working on.
Yeah, so as people on this channel know, I have a Substack, razib.substack.com. And so, or you could just Google Razib Khan Substack. I have a series where I'm going to be doing where I talk about the steppe, the Eurasian steppe, which stretches from Hungary to Mongolia. The first post is called Entering Stepplandia. And I will be talking about the genetics and history of the people of the steppe over the next couple of months. I am starting with the Indo-Europeans 5,000 years ago. And I will continue onward down past the Mongols. And so I will touch upon what we will be talking about this episode. So I just want viewers, listeners to, you know, keep an eye out for that.
Before we get started, to my subscribers, don't forget to check out the links in the video description below. It's going to take you to all of the awesome work that Razib Khan is doing. Become a subscriber, support his work, and let him know that we, the study of antiquity and the Middle Ages, sent you his way. What we're about to talk about is a subject many of you have requested for over a year at this point, and I couldn't wait to deliver this. It's a very fascinating topic, and I know you are all going to love it, and that is none other than the origins of the Huns. And Mr. Khan, whenever you hear the term Hun, whether in a historical or a context relating to ethnicity, what comes to your mind?
You know, what comes to my mind is, you know, the Dark Ages, the barbarians, the fall of the Roman Empire. But, you know, the word Hun has been used as an adjective. You know, during World War I, it was used against the Germans as, frankly, part of an Allied propaganda campaign.
Before diving in to the scientific origins of the Hunnic peoples, I wanted to actually ask, did the Huns have their own origin stories?
We don't know because they don't get to tell their own stories, unfortunately. I'm going to get into this on my series on the Substack, and I did allude to it in the first piece. The issue with the Eurasian steppe is in a lot of these cases, in the vast majority of cases, these people don't get to tell their own stories because they're not literate societies. They have an oral culture. And so when the people themselves dissolve, when the tribes of the Huns dissolved, their stories disappeared. We don't have texts. We don't have cuneiform. We don't have runes. We have none of that. The exception is A Secret History of the Mongols, which was commissioned by the family of Genghis Khan. And that was copied and preserved in China in the 14th and 15th century. And so we have a lot of this biographical detail about Genghis Khan that we wouldn't otherwise have. We would just have the viewpoint of the people they conquered and they attacked, which is somewhat biased.
Let's talk historiography, the tool that ultimately shapes how we see the past through the eyes of history. What has been the traditional viewpoints as to not only where the Huns came from, but also has this viewpoint changed over time?
There's two different viewpoints, opposite end of the extreme, and you know, reality is probably somewhere in the middle. The one viewpoint is that the Huns are an alien people from Eastern Eurasia, and a lot of older historians have connected them to the Xiongnu, who were a nomadic tribe north of China. And if you watch the Mulan movie, they were in the Mulan movie. They are the horse people in the Mulan movie. And they were led by a leader called the Shan Yu. And what happened in the first couple of centuries AD, really between 100 BC and 100 AD, is the Xiongnu were defeated by the imperial Chinese through co-option and then also like militarily. And so their confederacy kind of collapsed. There were remnants of the Xiongnu around for a long time, but many of them dispersed. So where'd they go? So the theory is the Xiongnu moved westward on the Eurasian steppe. So the Eurasian steppe exists as an ecological unit from the Altai Mountains all the way basically to Hungary if you follow some of the threads. And so the argument is the Huns are the refugees of the Xiongnu. They show up in the 3rd century AD right after the Xiongnu confederacy in Mongolia dispersed. And they're described by the historian Ammianus Marcellinus, who's a late antique historian in the 4th century, as basically, you know, they're beardless, they're kind of like fearsome looking, they're small, they're bow-legged. he used a lot of tropes of barbarians and aliens and others, you know? And so the other school has said that, well, maybe this was all propaganda. They weren't really, I mean, maybe they had some distant connection to the East, but really you could think of them more as a coalition of people. Some of them were maybe East Asian, but maybe most of them were Germanic or Sarmatian, Alanian, so like Iranian peoples, who knows? And that you can think of them more as opportunistic mercenaries. And so these are the two extremes. And this is why genetics is interesting, because if you want to answer questions about where people are from and who they are, quite useful.
Before moving to DNA itself, I wanted to ask, do you have any thoughts or theories that you want to put forward beforehand?
One thing that, you know, people routinely ask me is, so it seems like pastoralism, pure nomadism, actually emerged on the Western steppe. And, you know, by the time that this is live, I will have a post on that about the Indo-Europeans. So it emerged in Ukraine, in the Pontic steppe, and it seems to have expanded. And there was a lot of migration from the West to the East initially, to Mongolia. And then something happened like 2,500 years ago or so, where it kind of stabilized, and all of a sudden populations start moving from the east to the west. And so the Huns are one of the earliest instances of this, but the Magyars are another instance. There were Turks that arrived also later, and Tatars. So this is just the beginning of a longstanding dynamic, in my opinion.
Now I want to approach DNA. What has DNA shown us about the Hunnic peoples and where they are from?
There's actually a lot of ancient DNA, a lot of DNA from the steppe, because it's cold and it's dry. So the preservation is good. And there's some from Europe too. Basically, in the last couple of years, researchers have started to look at late antiquity, Johannes Kraus in particular, at Max Planck. So DNA, traditionally, ancient DNA was expensive. And so you would only want to do really ancient things where you didn't have historical records. They didn't really start to go into historical periods until recently, when it's been commoditized and it's been relatively cheap. What they did is they looked at some remains from individuals, from late Hunnic individuals, from the late period, say like the 5th century, and a little bit later. So after the collapse of Attila's empire, but there were still Huns around. They were still hanging around in the Danube areas before they eventually faded into the Avar Confederacy. So who are these people genetically? You can look at the relatedness of any given individual to different world populations. Many of your viewers have used 23andMe, Ancestry, these tools. Turns out these individuals, they have substantial East Asian ancestry, more than any random European would, okay? And some of the males, they have Y-chromosome haplogroups, paternal lineages, in particular Q, which is found in Siberia. So this idea that, oh, they had a very distant connection to East Asia, and that by the time, you know, we're hearing about them, mostly at the end of the 4th century and into the 5th century, Attila and his kin, that they were basically European, that seems to be totally false. Okay, in terms of like genetically, they're already a hybrid population, but they still have substantial ancestry from Eastern Asia, and their Y chromosomal haplogroups in these elite lineages are connecting them to Siberia. So what does that tell us? The Xiongnu are from Southern Siberia. They're from Mongolia. So it's not an implausible hypothesis that they were from the Xiongnu. Now, we do have DNA from the Xiongnu itself, and there's some researchers that contend, well, they were from a population related to the Xiongnu. And so genetically, where we are is that we're not sure that the Huns are from the Xiongnu, but they could be. Like, we've totally like not refuted that hypothesis now, because genetically, they have some relatedness to a group of people in southern Siberia that took up nomadism. Some of their Y chromosomes also indicate Iranian ancestry. And so when I said earlier, there was migration from east to the west. Earlier, before that, during the Bronze Age, there was migration from the west to the east. And these were often Scythians, Sarmatians, Iranian people that went all the way to Mongolia. And they carried a haplogroup R1A, which is very common in Europe today. Among Slavic people, and also in South Asia and Central Asia, among Indo-Iranian speaking people. And so some of the Huns had this. So what does that mean? Well, it looks like, looking at the ancient DNA in Mongolia, that these Iranian people, and also another people called Tokharians, Indo-European speakers, introduced pastoral lifestyles to this region of the world. And it was taken up by the indigenous people who were of East Asian, Siberian origins. And they assimilated some of the Iranian people. So when the Huns come back to Europe from Mongolia, they bring back with them some of the heritage of the Pontic steppe from 4,000 years ago. And so it's a complicated story of the Eurasian steppe going one direction and back. It's kind of like a freeway, international highway of yore. And so the Hunnic story is not just one of intrusion, it's of return. It's of a cycle of movement west to east and east to west.
And now I want to talk about legacy. We've covered DNA and where we believe the Hunnic peoples came from. And so now I want to talk about where they went. Do we have any descendants of the Hunnic peoples with us today?
Well, this is a very, very controversial issue because there's a lot of political valence around this in Hungary, right? So the Hungarian language, the Magyar language, is a Ugric language, which is related. It's a Central Siberian language. Probably they were originally, the original Hungarians, Magyars, were from the South Ural zone, Uralic zone, and they adopted pastoralism and nomadism from Turkic neighbors. They're not Turkic themselves. The only other languages in the Ugric family, which is distantly related to the Finnic languages, are like Monti and I think like Khansi that are in like north central Siberia. Okay, really obscure languages. And so they are not speaking a Xiongnu language. The Xiongnu were probably Turks. Okay, they probably spoke a Turkic language. And so there's debate about whether the Huns were assimilated by the Magyars. It gets more complicated because the Magyars themselves gave refuge to Turks because even though they were ethnically different, they practiced the same lifestyle, and Hungary has the biggest pasturage in Europe. If you're a steppe nomad, you want to go to Hungary. Hungary, and to a lesser extent, Wallachia, the Danube, and Plain. And so, you know, there's Turkic ancestry in some Hungarians at low levels. This could be for the Magyars, or it couldn't be. The question is not totally answered because we need more DNA. Like, we have, like, say, 20 individuals, we need 200, okay? What I will say is there's a fair amount of evidence from early Hungarian burials that the elite males, in particular looking at the Y chromosome, they were external, right? They were a people from Central Asia. Some of them could have been from the Huns. We don't know for sure. It could be that they assimilated the Huns. There were the Avars who came after the Huns, and then the Avars themselves were kind of assimilated by the Hungarians. So you have this like these multiple layers, and to tease them apart, what you really need to do is find descendants, which ancient DNA is getting better and better. They're developing new techniques. And I will tell you right now, so I just had a conversation with David Anthony, an Indo-Europeanist and archaeologist, and he's part of a working group where they are discovering that the earliest Indo-European expansions went from, say, Hungary to Mongolia 5,000 years ago, okay? Well, they've developed a method where they found someone buried in Mongolia who was a second cousin to someone buried in Hungary. So, like, you know, we have this idea that ancient people were just like, oh, they lived in their village. These clans were going from Hungary to Mongolia, bro. Like, that's kind of mind-blowing, right? And so the Huns are actually, like, the continuation of a long tradition, a tradition that will keep going until the gunpowder empires. You know, until the Eurasian frontier is basically closed in by the modern nation state system. And, you know, a lot of the listeners and viewers have probably like read about like the enclosures and all these other things that are happening. That happened in Eurasia. These pastoralist people were tamed after thousands of years. But, you know, I will say, like, for anyone interested, check out my Substack, razeev.substack.com, because this is not just alien to us. Like, people like me and you, we are descended from Indo-Europeans, you know? These are also our ancestors. Like, our ancestors were the first nomads. So we talk about the Huns like they're aliens to us. But the Huns were like what our forefathers were when they first arrived into Europe or Southern Asia. Okay? And so when we see them, we see us. Like, maybe not genetically, but culturally. And sometimes genetically, because they do have Iranian ancestry, right? And so I think, you know, the historiography can be quite negative on the Huns because we see like the Roman. We see like the Roman, but the Roman was once the Hun. That is the deeper truth there. That is, I think, what we need to acknowledge. And that what I'm trying to get across in my series is we have records of the people that the steppe was predatory upon. Like, let's be frank, it was brutal. But the steppe had its own view. And the irony is the people that we record, the Romans, the Indians, the Iranians, all these people that have records of steppe barbarians attacking them, they themselves descend from steppe barbarians. They just forgot. They just forgot. And so, you know, we're here with archaeology and ancient DNA to supplement history, to supplement myth, because history goes only so far with writing. And myth, you forget things. Now, you don't forget everything. So, for example, I'm going to like write about this in my series. The tradition of young men becoming wolves or dogs, lycanthropomorphs, the prototype of werewolves, that's a primal Indo-European motif. And so young Greek warriors were called dogs. The etymology for warrior in Sanskrit, in Vedic Sanskrit, is also dog. And, you know, this idea of like wolf warriors, that is also common in Germanic mythology. And so the Huns are part of this. Yes, ethnologically, they're different. They're probably Turkic. But do you know what Turkish nationalists call themselves? Gray wolves. It's the same motif. It's the same through line. Even though they're ethnologically very different, they've assimilated these primal steppe ways. And so what the Huns show us is they are surfacing steppe nomadism to the civilized world. They're some of our earliest records in detail. Because Ammianus, Marcellinus, was a soldier. So he recorded like his encounters. And so you see what civilized people, what sedentary people, what farmers, what the first farmers in Europe thought when the Indo-Europeans came in their wagons and their horses. You know, you see what they saw when we see the Huns. So I think it is part of this broader dynamic that has existed for thousands and thousands of years. And we're just kind of like highlighting it, instantiating it because of the fall of the Roman Empire is historically very salient.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed this presentation today. Razib Khan guided us through some very interesting, fascinating, and controversial topics relating to not just DNA and ethnicity, but to the Hunnic peoples in general. And so without further ado, Mr. Khan, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
It's my pleasure, man. My pleasure, Nick.
And lastly, don't forget to check out the links in the video description below. Take a look at all the awesome work that he is doing to help people like me and you better understand the subjects that we all love.